absorption of blue light than red light. In other words, the shroud itself is yellowish. Okay? Well, this talk might easily have been titled Laboratory Simulations of the Shroud Data in an Attempt to Reproduce It and Thereby Explain It. I'm sometimes known as a kitchen chemist, and one of my favorite dishes is baked linen with olive oil garnished with lemon. And those of you who don't understand that, we'll get to that later. Anyhow, I took a piece of modern linen again, baked it, and got a curve that reproduces the reflection characteristics of the shroud. So I succeeded in making a piece of linen that looks like the shroud background. For the moment, ignore this. This is iron oxide. We'll come back to that. Next slide. Okay, again into my baking experiments. Using these particular temperatures and these times, we're able to get the color. This is the color index of the shroud. And looking just at the reflectance of the shroud of cloth versus time, it rapidly decreases. We're using this scale. Rapidly decreases if baked at that temperature. Within an hour, it's definitely yellow, and if you continue baking for these number of hours, it becomes yellower and yellower, but not as rapidly as it did at first. The shroud itself is this yellow. Okay, so we haven't gotten quite there, but I don't know how long I'd be allowed to bake to get to that point. But that isn't quite important. This is the main point here. Next slide. Okay, now let's try to replicate the body image spectral characteristics. Again, the Gilbert's data for the shroud body image versus wavelength. Again, deep blue light and red light. This is the reflectance. I applied various materials to linen and put the linen then in an oven under controlled temperature time conditions, and then removed it and did spectral reflectance measurements again. Some of the materials I used were perspiration and body oils. That's these two curves. This is a very dense perspiration stain. This is a lighter one. I also used the spice myrrh. Later on, these experiments were done in approximately 2 years ago. Since then, I've found that a lot of materials will give me curves like this. There's nothing magic about myrrh, the spice myrrh, or perspiration. A lot of materials stimulate the reaction that Dr. Adler explained to you, namely the chemistry is an oxidation and a dehydration and a conjugation of the cellulose molecule to form a different molecular structure which absorbs blue light. Next. Okay, iron oxide. Let's just quickly look at how iron oxide reflects. Here's red light and blue light. This is right off the laboratory spectrophotometer. A concentration of only 4 micrograms per square centimeter. This is just barely visible to the eye. To the spectrophotometer, we see high reflectance in the red, and it begins then to absorb or reflect less as we go to green. And by the time we're in the blue, iron oxide is fairly dark. So it's got a distinctive curve which distinguishes it and is a confirmatory piece of evidence to the chemistry which says that yes, there's iron there, and there's even some iron oxide, but to a very low level. And in fact, the amount of iron or iron oxide is so minute that it's not visible to the eye. Therefore, it doesn't contribute to the visibility of the shroud image. Next. That was iron oxide in the previous slide. These are hydrated iron oxides, most commonly known as rust. Larry Schwalbe kindly measured the concentrations on the linen that I prepared for him. This number really is 5 micrograms per square centimeter. It has this sort of reflectance curve. See, it's still quite reddish. This number is really 18, redder yet, and by the time you get to, that should be 30, it's very red. So these, again, have distinctive curves and are quite distinct from the body image. Next. Okay, if you can lower the lights a little more. These are pieces of linen to which I've added various concentrations, and Dr. Schwalbe measured the concentrations again using the X-ray fluorescence method. I then did spectrophotometry on them, and the point is that here we've got 25 micrograms per square centimeter, and there we have 8. Here we have 2.8, 3 micrograms. Now there's 2.8. Okay, you can just barely see the color when you're down to approximately 3 micrograms per square centimeter. So that is sort of the detection limit of both the spectrophotometer and the eye. And the color is still distinctively red, quite different from the shroud body image. So previous descriptions of the color of the shroud body image, which were made essentially from color slides. It's very difficult to get the right color on a color slide for such a low contrast image. Those previous descriptions describe the shroud body image as sepia. We know today, those of us that have seen it in person, those of us who have done experiments, that yellow, straw yellow, is more appropriate. And certainly this is, can't by any stretch of the imagination be described as yellow. Next. Okay, some of the materials that I applied to linen to simulate the body image characteristics were done on one piece of old linen, 30-year-old linen, and they consisted of applications of myrrh and aloes, which were provided by Dr. Ray Rogers, blood, iron oxide, and perspiration and skin oil. Then there was a background area used as control. This was put into the oven, baked at a high temperature for several hours, and then they did reflectance curves, some of which you've already seen. Thanks to Dr. Adler, my beautiful piece of cloth has been disfigured. You see these patches. He applied some very nasty chemicals to rehydrogenate the reaction that occurred here, restore the linen to its original color, thus proving the chemistry, namely the oxidative dehydrative conjugation chemistry that explains the what the body image is. Next. So again, we have the myrrh reflectance curve, the shroud body image. This is a quite expanded scale, and this agreement is considered quite good. When you get too much dirt from your skin, then you have quite a bit of absorption in the ultraviolet, so it departs. But this is fairly good agreement. And of course, iron oxide doesn't have anything to do with the shroud body image visibility. Next. Just a close-up of one of the areas that were developed by this process. Now, the accelerated aging technique, which is what I did, amounts to baking the material at high temperature for a short period of time. And what I've done there is simply accelerated the natural process that occurs at normal temperatures for longer periods of time. We cannot specify how long it would take at normal temperatures and humidity to achieve the reflectance characteristics that the shroud body image has, because there are many other factors that are involved. The actual acidic condition of the cloth, the presence of all this calcium, and several other factors, the amount of humidity, the amount of exposure to solar ultraviolet energy, all affect the rate of this reaction. But basically, this is what's going on. Later, Adler and Heller confirmed by the microchemical tests on the fibrils, without a doubt, and you heard this just a few minutes ago, that this is indeed the chemistry of the shroud body image. Next. Now let's go on, this is getting boring. Okay, some of the kitchen laboratory experiments used olive oil, and we got a stain that was measurable. This had had some previous exposure to sunlight. The slide isn't as clear as the live picture would be, but exposure to sunlight does some degree of presensitization. Next. Okay, see, these are things you can go home and do yourself. You could use olive oil or lemon juice. I will now explain the title that my friend Adler hung on me, Agent X. I don't know, it's a combination of these or any one particular one to make images. Okay, I applied some lemon juice to my fingers and got, after baking, a visible image that looked like this. Okay, these are all self-explanatory. Lemon juice is not a new idea. Those of you who have children have used lemon juice as an invisible ink. Next. This demonstrates that with an aqueous solution of one of these stimulating materials, you can get an image on only one side of the cloth. It doesn't need to penetrate on the other side. So I've used oily materials like olive oil, also aqueous materials, and both produce the accelerated degradation of the cellulose. The amount of penetration differs, of course, between an oily material and an aqueous material. Next. This is a variety of things, and the point I'm trying to make is just because a spice or an oil or perspiration stimulates this reaction to occur doesn't mean it was used at the time. Some of the Italian scientists, or one in particular, is saying that the chemistry is such and such because there is now myrrh and aloes, etc. Well, Adler and Heller have already shown that these materials do not exist today. Where did they go if they were there to start with? They probably were either consumed in the reaction or have evaporated over the years. But I have a variety of things. Just quickly go through them. This is tea, orange juice, lemon, urine, perspiration of various degrees in a blank. This was baked at 130 degrees C for a couple hours, and the images showed up. Next. Well, briefly, the chemistry. This is a part of the cellulose molecule. When you dehydrate, you end up changing the molecule such that you create a conjugated bond, and that bond has the property of absorbing blue light. If you went further and did a lot of heating, you can create other more complex groups which have different properties, some of which fluoresce. Next. Okay, here is probably barely visible to you, an olive oil stain done on my fingers. Now we're attempting to reproduce some of the properties that we see on the shroud. Next. We had that processed on the VP8 analyzer, and you can see that we have reproduced cylinder-like objects resembling the original fingers. Now, the way I did this follows a suggestion put forth by John German, who's a team member, that if you apply a stimulating material to, say, your fingers and put the cloth on top of the fingers and then lightly apply pressure and on the very tops and slightly begin to form around the finger to pick up the curves, you can reproduce the contour. The idea that that Mr. and Mrs. German have is that a cloth placed on a body and, say, put in a tomb or somewhere in a cave would absorb moisture, become more flexible such that it begins to contact around the curve. It spent most of its time at the crown of the curve and less time going around the curve. The fact that it spent most time on the crown means it picked up more of the stimulating material than it does on the side, and therefore the image is darker. This might give contour information. Next. Okay, this is Larry Schwalbe's work. I'm going to talk a little bit more about iron. These are the concentrations he found. Very little in the face compared with the blood areas. We're looking at iron. The blood areas are a large amount of iron in the blood areas. Very little in the image. Okay. And what was called the background, this has already been mentioned, has more indeed than the face. And since then, looking carefully, next. Well, Larry's already presented this. I've indicated here the minimum visible detectable amount of iron oxide. Next. Again, Larry took his trace through here, and this area turned out to have to be a water-stained area, and Dr. Adler indicated that some of the blood particles were transported by the water and deposited. This probably concentrated the amount of iron. Next. Just a liberal summary of Dr. Adler's results of the iron on the shroud. This iron was deposited by the ion exchange mechanism. It accounts for most of it. There is some bound as blood particles. It accounts for that much. But the real iron oxide is very low. This is what would be detectable by the spectrophotometric and visual techniques. Okay. All three types are seen by X-ray as iron. Chemistry distinguishes each type for what they are. These are direct quotes from Adler. And spectrophotometry and the eye are sensitive to as low as 3 micrograms per square centimeter of types 2 and 3. I'm just driving home the point that if you had that much iron, you would see it as contributing to the visibility of the image. And you just don't. Next. Okay, once again, characteristics of the body image. Next. And the photomicrograph of the tip of the nose showing the discolored fibrils with some reddish material. Next. Another body image area where we have some clumping of colored groups of yellowed fibrils adjacent to fibrils that have no color. Next. Again, the dirty heel area, which is an intense body image area. Next. This is done in the laboratory. We have the striped effect. We have clumps of colored fibrils adjacent to uncolored fibrils. We have coloration only on the topmost fibrils. It doesn't penetrate. So we have succeeded in reproducing several of the image characteristics. We have reproduced the color. We've reproduced the physical location of some of the stains. We have also reproduced, to a certain extent, contour information on fingers. Next. Again, the fluorescence photography tells us something. This is the visual photograph, and this is the fluorescent return. Look at the scorches, very faint scorches, emit reddish-brown coloration. The scourges and body image have low contrast in the visible, much higher contrast in the ultraviolet emission. You can begin to see more detail in the scourge marks. Next. This is the chest area. The white light photograph and the UV fluorescent photograph. I urge you to do this at the exhibit. I can't show it here. The slides don't have quite the fidelity of color as the prints do. In the exhibit, there are UV fluorescent photographs. If you were to compare a body image area with a scorched area that has the same density, and it's cut off of the screen here, do that in the visible and look in the ultraviolet at the fluorescent return. The scorches have a color. They have a reddish brown fluorescence. The body image has essentially no color. The blood, the same way, has no color. These speak against the hypothesis that the body image resulted from a scorch. Adler presented supporting information, and Dr. Jackson also proved to us that a scorch, or radiation, or diffusion could not give us the properties that the body image has. Next. That's the back of the head and the back of the shoulders. We're looking at this, the skin wounds now. Next. Well, this was meant to show again where you have very faint scorched areas, you have coloration, and you don't have that on the body image. Next. Pay attention to the skin wounds on the chest. Next. That's the white light. And that is the ultraviolet. You begin to see scratches that the UV has shown us that there is detail in the skin wounds that is really scratch-like to the millimeter scale. This tells us something. And what it tells me in particular is that the cloth had to be in direct intimate contact in order to transfer such detail from the skin to the cloth. And certainly that was true of the blood transferred by direct contact. So the next logical step to take is that the foreign material that was on the skin, whether it be the natural perspiration and skin oils or burial ointment, also transferred from the skin to the cloth by direct contact. This then was the catalyst or stimulant for the chemistry, the darkening of the cellulose in those local areas that accounts for the body image. We did an experiment in the laboratory. This is Vern Miller's students actually did this. Took some linen and folded it, and this indicates a series of folds where that's the top, these are intermediate, and that's the bottom. They scorched, using a soldering iron, scorched such that you had a gradation in the density of the scorch. Then looked in the ultraviolet. Now, this is a stainless steel ball bearing. Its purpose is, if you get a lot of return from there, then you have a leak. You aren't really looking at pure ultraviolet. Your camera isn't purely blocked from ultraviolet. Okay, this is the way it looks in fluorescence. This is a deep scorch, and there's very little fluorescence. Until you get to the light scorch, you have a rim of fluorescing material. When you get very light, that's quite bright. Okay? The next thing is the students took that cloth and washed it. And they were clever enough to hang it sideways. And what you see is that the pyrolysis products caused by the scorch were transported by the water and went off to the side here. Okay? And we have that on the shroud also. The flaring that you see in the scorch in white light, you can see as a gradation in color, reddish to brown, to more dense brown near the scorched areas. But what's remaining is cellulose washed clean of the fluorescing, of at least the volatile or mobile complex fluorescing compound, leaving fluorescing cellulose. And it fluoresces this color. Okay, after a second washing, more of the material is removed, and you still have remaining just cellulose that itself fluoresces. And again, this is evidence that weighs against a scorch hypothesis. Because if the image were scorched, you would have an image that just lighted up as this does. And this, going back to the natural white light, just to compare what's actually happened visually, is almost indetectable. But by ultraviolet fluorescence, you see a lot more. Next. Okay, now we're able to summarize what we learn in the laboratory when we attempt to reproduce, using cellulose, some body image characteristics. We can produce identical spectral reflectance curves to match the shroud background linen. When we add sensitizing porin materials, unspecified agents X, whatever, we get identical spectral reflectance characteristics to the body image. The surface, we get surface fibril discoloration for aqueous materials, but for oily materials we get penetration. The color is insoluble and is invariant as we approach scorches. No particulates are required to give us this discoloration. We get a dark on light image, in other words, a reversed image. Perfectly natural, just what you would expect. No mystery there. Finger shapes have been reconstructed. Only one experiment was done, and it was encouraging. Certainly we're going to pursue this. The image is non-fluorescent. And I just have a note that this is the degree of degradation or darkening of the cellulose is subject to external presensitization or external treatment of the cloth. Next. Just quickly, that experiment done by Verne students. This is the white light, faint scorch. Next. The UV, quite bright. Next. Washed, and you can see the plume of fluorescing material going off to the side. Next. Washed again, you still have fluorescing cellulose. Notice the color is kind of getting close to what we saw in the shroud. Next. Okay, this is the I hope it doesn't bother you that it's upside down. Of course, the face is here, and that's the chest. I'll try to focus that a little bit. Again, we're talking about the detail seen in the scourge marks on the chest. Scratch-like detail. Next. On the back, this is white light. Look at the scourge marks. Next. Look at the detail you've got there. You see the two diffuse or the dumbbell shape, but also you can see scratch-like detail. I think that's pretty convincing that the cloth was in direct contact with the skin. Next. So we can sort of summarize. Remember, our original question was, what is the image? And that question consists really of two parts. What is the image, actually? What is the chemistry of the image? And how did it get there? I think we have answered, without a doubt, And Adler and Heller are the people responsible for nailing this down such that there is no question remaining. What is the image of the chemistry? It's the advanced degradation of cellulose. And that's it in more detail. And how did it get there? Okay. I've proposed a hypothesis that it has got there by direct contact between the skin and the linen. That we had a latent image that namely developed over time at normal temperatures over tens, hundreds of years. I don't know. Can't tell you. Nobody can tell you. And this latent image was catalyzed locally by